Later on, he gets a few more second chances in post-production. He can cover up his sins by editing and re-editing. He can alter the entire mood of a film by replacing the music score. He gets yet another chance when the finished cut is shown to preview audiences. With so much money on the line, film people like to test the market. And sometimes the director will accept the audience's comments and make more changes. In many ways, a director's job is how he uses all his second chances. When I worked with Miloš Forman on Amadeus in 1980, I noted a distinct change in his work habits and attitude in the 3 years since we had worked together on Hair. Hair had not been a happy experience for Miloš. He was tormented by his producers during filming, even though he was fresh off the critical and commercial success of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which had swept all 5 major Academy Awards. The Hair experience ran so counter to Miloš's sense of artistry and control that he would sometimes nap for 16 hours rather than face the bullying producers. Hair did some business, as they say, but it was not the success we were all hoping for. Miloš applied everything he'd learned about power and control on the set of Hair to Amadeus. On Amadeus, he was not only the director, he was also a producer. If it failed, at least he would have the certainty that it was his failure, accomplished without compromises. He stacked everything in his favor. He made sure he had a great story in Peter Schaefer's original play, which had succeeded with audiences around the world. He had sublime music, all Mozart, to work with. He had great locations in Prague. Many of the actors from both sides of the Atlantic were either friends or people who had worked with him before. There were no star egos to deal with. Miloš was taking no chances, and the results speak for themselves. Not every art form offers such comfort or tosses you a life jacket. A sculptor whose work is deemed a failure cannot go back and rework the metal, clay, or stone. He must absorb the criticism and do better the next time. It's pretty much the same for painters and photographers. You don't get do-overs in the plastic arts. It's the same in the dance world. No do-overs. You mount your ballet, the audience applauds or yawns, which determines whether the work gets mounted again. A hit can be revived season after season. A flop is forgotten within a week. Wouldn't it be nice if we could predict and preempt a work's less than favorable reception? If we could give ourselves a second chance before we find out we really need it? Well, actually, we often can. Before I sent this manuscript to my publisher, I showed it to 12 trusted friends and factored their comments into the text. Where more than one of them was confused by a section of text, I reworked it to make it clearer. By building failure, or at least the prospect of failure, into the process, I gave myself a second chance. By acknowledging failure, you take the first step to conquering it. 32. Build your own validation squad. We all seek approval and validation for our efforts. In the beginning, we desperately seek the approval of others, of anybody, to assure us that we're on the right path, that we aren't wasting our time, that we haven't made a monumental error. But that neediness fades as we get older and more confident. We become a better and clearer judge of our own work. If a piece is good, we know it before the public applauds and the reviews come in. If it's bad, we know that too. As Montaigne said, we easily confess to others an advantage of courage, strength, experience, activity, and beauty. But an advantage in judgment we yield to none. Don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that it is all right to be a self-contained, solipsistic, don't-give-a-damn-what-anyone-thinks egotist, operating under the credo of, as long as I like it, it's good. That way lies madness, or at least embarrassing self-indulgence. But there comes a time when you have no choice but to trust your judgment above all others. As Billy Wilder once said, if I like something, I am lucky enough, fool enough, or smart enough to believe that other people are going to like it too. Circular logic? Yes. But at least you are drawing the circle. As we mature, we need to build criticism into the working process, as we do with failure. For a long time now, I've had my own validation squad, a small group of people I invite to see my works in progress. I trust them to look at my crudest, clumsiest noodlings and reward me with their candor. I put a lot of faith in what they say. My criteria for these validators are very basic. I pick people who, A, have talents I admire greatly, so I know they have judgment, B, happen to be my friends, so I know they have my best interests at heart, C, don't feel they are competing with me, so I know they have no agenda, no matter what they say, and D, have hammered my work in the past, so I know they are capable of brutal honesty. I don't want my feelings spared. I want an honest answer to the eternal question, do we care? If you choose your validators, you never have to look at them and wonder, who died and made you God? Because you did. Look around you. Who are the brightest, most talented people you know? Choose them. Qualify them in the same way that a salesperson qualifies customers by determining if they have the money to buy, a need for the product, and the authority to make the buying decision, and then get them involved. All you need are people with good judgment in other parts of their lives who care about you and will give you their honest opinion with no strings attached. The last point is crucial. All things being equal, the validation that matters most is the kind that comes with no agenda. Chapter 12. The Long Run. I was 58 years old when I